Hello, and welcome to Profiles. I'm Owen Johnson. Today, we will be visiting with an individual who plays an important role in the diplomatic world. He's the ambassador from Poland to the United States. Poland's ties with Indiana University go back at least to the early 1930s, when the famed pianist and one-time Polish Prime Minister Ignacy Paderewski played a concert here in Bloomington. The university began teaching Polish during World War II, and then after a brief hiatus, resumed again in the late 40s. In 1974, IU began working with the Polish government and the U.S. government on a project that resulted in the creation of the American Studies Center at Warsaw University and the Polish Studies Center at IU. So it's not surprising that the Polish ambassador should come to visit. The ambassador is Janusz Reiter, who took up his post in Washington in December 2005. He had earlier served a term as an ambassador to Germany. Prior to that, he was a journalist. Mr. Reiter grew up in the town of Kościerzyna, near the city of Gdansk in northern Poland on the coast of the Baltic Sea. Your Excellency, what was it like to grow up in the 1950s in Poland?
Well, this is a long time ago, and if I think of this time, it seems to me that that was another world. This is part of my generation's life. We've lived in a disrupted world with many breaks. I was a child back in the 50s, so I have more memories about the early 60s, which politically was the same, more or less the same time. It may surprise you, but if I think of my town, Kościerzyna, back in the late 50s and in the early 60s, there is little of a communism present in my life, in my family's life, in average people's life. There is a strong Catholic church in this town. The social structures are more or less the same as in the pre-war Poland. I was born and I grew up in a part of Poland that was not largely affected by the political changes in Poland. I belong to a family that never left this region. They always lived there. And this is, maybe the minority of Polish families. Most people had to move from what was Eastern Poland and what is today Ukraine, Belarus, or Lithuania, or they were transferred from the south. Poland was called a country on wheels. It was moved from east to west, from west to east. And so in my region, my family lived in a region that was little affected by that. So we had a strong sense of tradition. And that was why, for me, the Catholic Church, for example, was much more present. I became independent. I became an adult in a sort of revolt against the structures of this town. I wanted to get out of it because it was too small, it was too narrow. I wanted out to Warsaw, which I considered the open world. It was not that open, which I learned afterwards. And to add one more thing, that was a pretty much closed world. I remember very well the first German I met, the first foreigner I met, was in 1970 in Gdańsk, a German tourist. There were not so many of them in Poland at this time. He asked me about the street, and I was so surprised. I didn't know what to say, even if I had learned German a little bit. So I was so excited because that was the first foreigner that whom I met in Poland. So traveling was not part of our way of life. That started changing in the 70s, but the 60s and the late 50s was about living in a pretty closed but relatively peaceful, harmonious world.
Do you have any memories of the first demonstrations in Gdansk in 1970?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do. I mean, I was not living in Gdansk itself, but we were very close, and I remember it very well. I remember families who lost sons or fathers in Gdansk, workers of the shipyard who were killed by the police. That was one of the key experiences for my generation, even if I was not, as I said, directly involved.
You chose to study German at Warsaw University. Why German?
That's not easy to explain, because to understand that, you have to understand the special relationship between Poland and Germany. And, well, let me first start saying that I'm today considered one of the most pro-German public figures in Poland. And I'm sometimes heavily criticized for that. But I was not born as a friend of Germany. And I had a very ambiguous attitude towards Germany. Why? Because Germany was part of many families' life in a very negative way. My father was a Polish soldier in September 1939. He was in a German camp. He was badly treated by the Germans, and he suffered until the end of his life from this time in the German camp. He never said anything negative about the Germans. So it seemed that I took, so to speak, the part of my father, and I blamed the Germans more than he did, which is maybe psychologically to understandable, but so I had a very critical, negative, emotional attitude towards Germany. But that was a negative, but it was a sort of impetus that made me look at the country, that made me try to understand the country, that made me try to deal with this country, that I considered a country, an enemy country. And it took me some time to understand that, well, the country that had been an enemy country could become and would become and should become a friendly country. And I remember, to give you just one example, that was not only an intellectual process, it was also an emotional process. I met a German who was, well, more or less the same age as my father, and he was a professor in Germany. He was a very nice man. He was a gentleman. I liked him very much, and I trusted him. I felt that he was an honest person, and I learned that he was a German soldier in September 1939. He was a German pilot. He dropped bombs in Poland, and exactly where my father was a soldier. He dropped bombs on my father, so to speak. He wanted to kill my father. That was an important experience for me, because suddenly I saw someone who wanted to kill my father, and I knew I couldn't blame him for that, because I knew that, well, he was involved in a tragic, he was a sort of victim of the dictatorship in his country, even if he did not oppose it. But I had no doubts whatsoever about the honesty of this man, and that helped me understand the tragedy of the war in a different way, and that also helped me understand Germany much better and helped me change my attitude towards Germany. He was just one of people who helped me change my perception of Germany. There were more people. I was really lucky to find many honest, impressive people in Germany committed to the transformation of Germany and committed to the reconciliation with Poland.
How important a role did Willy Brandt with his Ostpolitik have in changing the relationship as you understood it?
Oh, he certainly had an important role. The process of opening up in Poland towards Europe, including Germany, started actually in the 1970s after the Polish-German Treaty that was signed by Willy Brandt in December 1970. And it was also the beginning of the détente in Europe. And Poland was a country that, was much more involved in the process than any other country in Eastern Europe. And I remember this very well. Hundreds of thousands of people in Poland started traveling to the West, started traveling and discovering the West and changing their mind, changing their perception of the Western world and making comparisons. That was certainly, it could have appeared to be a risky endeavor, because certainly the communist regimes or the communist regime in Poland tried to utilize this détente policy for their own political purposes and tried it to use it for as a sort of legitimacy or to legitimize themselves. But, well, as we know now, they failed to control the process. So the process got out of control. That helped change Poland. And without this time, without the period of the détente, I could hardly imagine solidarity being established in 1980. And I could hardly imagine when the Polish opposition in the 80s. So I'm not suggesting that the détente was so to speak, that the concept of the détente was to produce an opposition in Poland. But it was the logical further step. And in the longer run, it became more and more clear that the Western world would prevail in this competition between the West and the East. The détente made this competition possible, because the competition was only possible if the Eastern world opened up. As long as the Eastern bloc, the Eastern countries were closed, there was no competition. So I believe that that was a great achievement, and Willy Brandt certainly largely contributed to that. Without the concept of reconciliation between Poland and Germany, there would have been a détente in Europe.
Now, I want to come back to the 1980s in a minute, but first, you started working as a journalist, I think, in 1976 for the newspaper Życie Warszawy.
77. Yeah.
What led you to journalism?
I can hardly remember what led me to journalism. Actually, I wanted to deal with literature, and I wanted to work at the university, but then I got some doubts whether that was the right place for me. It was a little too far from the real life for me, because the university in Poland, or universities in Poland, were, at least in some parts, places that enjoyed some freedom. But if you dealt with the literature of Baroque, or with the 19th century literature, you could do your job quite freely without much control of the authorities. But that was a sort of, escapism, so to speak. So you could create your own worlds and to have the freedom of breathing, to breathe freely in this world. However, this world was pretty much isolated, and I didn't feel that that was the right place for me. So I wanted to live in the real world and to deal with the real world. And journalism was, so to speak, that was about dealing with the real world. Was it about dealing freely with the real world? No, it was not. As I learned very quickly, I was lucky then to go to Germany, to be invited by the publisher of the German weekly Die Zeit, which is, maybe the best weekly in Germany, the highest level of journalism. I was invited by Marion Dönhoff, Countess Marion Dönhoff, who became a good friend of mine. And I learned then another concept of journalism, the concept of free, independent journalism. And that impressed me, and that changed my life. And I returned to Poland with another vision of journalism. So, and I knew there was no return to where I had been before going to Die Zeit. And then, fortunately, that coincided with the rise of Solidarność, and that made the and that gave me the hope that this understanding of journalism, this concept of journalism, could be also practiced in Poland itself, and it could, in the years 1980-81, and it could afterwards, even after the imposition of the martial law. However, not in the official, in the state-controlled media, but in the underground magazines and newspapers, and I wrote for a number of them, and I was editing a number of them, and also to some extent to in some newspapers that were published and owned by the Catholic Church, that offered a sort of alternative to the communist government.
Let's talk about more about that in just a moment. But first, let's take a break and listen to some music that is one of your favorites from the soundtrack from the movie Paris, Texas. That was music from the soundtrack of the movie Paris, Texas. Today on Profiles, we're visiting with Janusz Reiter, the Polish ambassador to the United States. For people in among our listening audience, there may be some who have forgotten some of the details of the 1980s. In August of 1980, there were demonstrations in the shipyards in Gdansk. Young worker by the name of Lech Wałęsa wound up as being their leader. And for about 16 months, Poland seemed to have an enormous amount of freedom, which was crushed by the declaration of martial law on December 13th, 1981. What are your recollections of that really revolutionary period?
Well, Adam Michnik, one of the leading Polish intellectuals and editor-in-chief of the leading newspaper, of the leading daily, Gazeta Wyborcza, called it once the Polish Festival. there was a festive mood in Poland. It was an exciting time because every day you had the sense that you were involved in something that changed your life and something that could come to an abrupt end. So you enjoyed every day knowing that it might be the last day. Certainly, after some time, some people may have felt that the external threat became, well, sort of irreal. The question that was discussed almost every day, the question that was the number one issue was, will they come or won't they come? They, that was the Soviet Union and the other Eastern Bloc countries. So would they intervene militarily in Poland?
As they had done in Czechoslovakia in 1968.
As they did in Czechoslovakia or in Hungary in 1956. So the Soviet Union cast a shadow on Poland. But we tried to ignore this shadow. And we tried to behave as if there were no external threats. And I think this is that was the only way one could behave. Certainly, at the same time, there was at least the attempt to control this process. Solidarność was sometimes, solidarity was called a self-restraining revolution. So this revolution tried not to provoke, not to unnecessarily provoke the Soviet Union and the other guardians of the Eastern Bloc. However, this method has its limitations because the very existence of the movement, of the Solidarity movement, was a provocation to the Eastern Bloc and to the Soviet Union. So without even challenging the Soviet rule, Solidarity was a challenge to the Soviet Union, and also it was a challenge to the communist regime in Poland itself. So one can say today the response, the reaction was inevitable. However, we had the sense that every day that we won, so to speak, made us stronger because we created a sort of fait accompli. And every day that we lived in freedom made it more difficult for the Eastern Bloc to crush this freedom, to crush solidarity, to crush our dreams. Well, now we know that happened. The martial law was imposed. Solidarity was crushed. However, as we also know today, it was not the end of the story. It was just an interruption. There was no return to the status quo ante. There was no return. The country was different, and Europe was a different continent. There was no return, for example, to the old détente concept. That was that became the problem between Solidarity and the democratic opposition on the one hand, and Germany, and especially the German Social Democrats. They wanted to do business as usual, even after the martial law in Poland, while we believed, and I think rightly believed, that the détente could not be continued after the imposition of martial law. Because the martial law in Poland showed very clearly the limitations of the détente. Now, it was a question of how to support the first real democratic movement in a communist country that had political aspirations, that didn't call itself only a civil rights movement or human rights movement, but called itself a political alternative. And the West had to make a clear commitment to support it, or to support the communist regime. So there was a hard choice, and many people in the West wanted to avoid this hard choice, but the hard choice became inevitable.
Poland in the 1980s, after martial law, for outsiders, was a fascinating place. I had spent some time in Czechoslovakia before then, and I came to Poland in 1985 and was just amazed. I could meet with the former spokesman for Solidarity. I was able to interview the chief spokesman for the government. He had a press conference every week with the foreign media that was not only broadcast, but then the transcript for it was published in newspapers. It seemed like a very open and exciting place, even after martial law.
It was an exciting place. And you know, what you were describing, that was an example of a sort of competition or struggle between the then opposition, the democratic opposition, and the communist regime. Both wanted to win the sympathy of the Western world. For different reasons, the Solidarity movement and the democratic opposition needed the moral support of the Western world, because that showed. So the message was: we may be politically weak, but morally, we are the legitimate representation of the country, and sooner or later, this moral legitimacy would be transformed in a political mandate. While the communist regime tried to win the West's support to show that the opposition was isolated, and that it was that people in the opposition were simply unable to understand the realities of the world. Because the realities of the world were, that was their message, that the world respected those who had power. And since they had power, they would be respected by the world. While we said, so to speak, no, it is not only about power, it is also about values, it is about moral legitimacy. But that made Western journalists an important part of the Polish development. And you're right, the transcript of the press conferences of the spokesman of the government were an important source of information for the Polish public. However, I have to add, you know what was the real source of information? It was not the answers, it was the questions. Because the way Western journalists formulated their questions was that was really what people wanted to learn. That was what people wanted to listen to, and not the answers of the of people from the government. But it was very unusual in the then Eastern Bloc. It was unusual. So the Polish, the Poland in the 80s was maybe more repressive than other countries, but it was a country that offered much more freedom in a certain sense. You may have ended up in jail in Poland, but you knew for what. While you may have ended up in jail in Czechoslovakia or in the GDR for almost nothing. In Poland, at least, you knew what you were doing. And if you were publishing illegal newspapers, well, you had to take a risk. If you were organizing independent political groups, you had to accept the risk. While in the other communist countries, you couldn't even have you couldn't even try to publish illegal newspapers or establish independent groups. The secret police would have prevented you from even trying it. That was the difference between Poland and the other communist countries.
In 1989, many Americans think that communism fell when the Berlin Wall fell. But in fact, in Poland, there was this large roundtable discussion with representatives of the government, representatives of Solidarity, and neutral experts who came to an agreement and then had free elections in which the communists were basically voted out of power. What was your reaction when that happened?
Well, this was a little unusual for Poland because the Poles have the reputation of having less sense of realpolitik, and the Poles are considered a nation that with an strong inclinations to romantic spontaneous reactions, and the Polish behavior in 1989 was not spontaneous. It was not romantic. It was very much self-controlled. It was very disciplined, but it was not very spectacular. It was politically sensational because for the first time the communist regime sat down with the opposition, recognizing the opposition as a partner, and able and willing to share power, not knowing that they would lose power very soon, only a couple of weeks later. However, we tried in Poland to even to avoid the impression, not to leave the impression that we wanted to export this Polish model of revolution or reform to other countries, because we were very much aware of the risks in of the risks for Poland as a country that was surrounded by communist countries. And the communist regimes in other countries didn't want to step back. However, the Polish example had an enormous power. It attracted a lot of people and it encouraged people in other countries. So whether we wanted or not, we only wanted to limit the risk, but we were pleased seeing people in Czechoslovakia and even people in East Germany following, so to speak, Poland and speaking up against the communist regime and challenging the communist regime. And then the Berlin Wall fell, and that was very spectacular. It was much more spectacular than the events in Poland itself. And even more, when the Berlin Wall fell, that was a clear signal that the Eastern Bloc was coming to an end, that the Eastern Bloc would fail. And that was certainly, that made the events in East Berlin geopolitically and internationally very relevant. But it was also the question of just of perception. The spectacular images of from Berlin were spread around the world, while the images from Warsaw, from the Round Table, were much less spectacular. So we have to share, so to speak, the pride of this achievement with the Germans and others, and I'm fine with that, frankly speaking. I'm fine with that. That was, after all, an unusual time when the peoples of the former Eastern Bloc really got together. And I remember very well my visit to East Berlin in October 1989, before the Berlin Wall fell, and I never felt as much sympathy for my country as in October 1989, because people saw in Poland the model for East Germany, and they took over this model very successfully.
In October 1989, you probably never imagined that you would be coming back a year later as ambassador to Germany.
That's right. That's right. However, in October 1989, I had a sort of, I could say déjà vu, but in a very special form, because I remembered very well living in Poland back in the 80s and being visited by people from the Western world, journalists and other people. And now I visited people in East Berlin coming from a free country. And so I was more or less in the same position as my Western colleagues, friends back in the 80s. That was really a very exciting experience. No, I didn't think of serving in Germany as ambassador. However, I have to admit that I rejected a lot of offers from the government, a lot of proposals from the government. I didn't want to go into politics in Poland, but there was one model of career, so to speak, that I really considered, well, attractive. That was being ambassador to Germany. I didn't speak to anybody about that. But one day, the then prime minister called me and asked me would I like to go to Germany. It didn't take me very much time to answer his question. I said yes. Yeah.
That must have been a hard assignment, though. You've already referred to the World War II experience of Germany and Poland and the traditional understanding of Polish history as being between the great powers of Germany and Russia. Was it difficult to work as ambassador during those years?
It was an absolutely exciting experience. Germany was, so to speak, waiting for a new face of Poland. Germany was keen to see the new democratic free Poland. And I was the one who gave this free democratic Poland a face. And that was a face of someone who was friendly towards Germany and who understood Germany, who spoke the language. I studied German language and literature in Warsaw. I knew a lot of people in Germany. I gave them the sense that this new Poland would be and could be a friendly neighbor. And that was very well received in Germany. Everything was open for me. That was a great time. It was a great time, after all, because I felt every day that things were changing and I was able to shape them. That was much more than to co-shape them, let's say. It was much more than the traditional diplomacy. It was only doable in such unusual period of time. So I remember this as a great experience.
Now, after you were ambassador, you spent time in various policy discussion or policy study organizations like the Foreign Policy Council, the Independent Center for International Studies. And then you wind up as ambassador to the United States. I wonder if you would share with us the story about how first in 1981 you were coming to the United States and didn't get here.
Well, yeah, in December 1981, I went to the airport in Warsaw with my air ticket, with my passport and my visa for the US. My wife escorted me to the airport. However, I caught a cold. Nothing, it was not really bad, but bad enough to make my wife doubt whether it was really good for me to do this travel. And I decided, instead of flying to New York, to stay in Poland and to postpone the trip until May next year. Which I didn't know was that only a few days later, the martial law would be imposed in Poland. The country was closed, the borders were closed, and I wouldn't be granted the exit visa in Poland for, well, 5 or 6 years. If I'd made another decision at this airport in December 1981, I'd be an American citizen today. I have no doubt about it. There's many people in Poland who were surprised by the martial law in America or in other countries. Do I regret? No, I don't. Certainly I don't. I only sometimes try to imagine what my life would have been like if I made another decision back in December 1981. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine. If I'd made the other decision, if I'd be now a U.S. citizen, maybe I would have tried. I would try to imagine what my life would have been like if I'd stayed in Poland instead of going to New York in December 1981. So this is really one of the few situations in life when you are standing at a crossroads without knowing it. And only afterwards, you realize that you made a choice that changed your whole, that affected your whole life. So I know that my life could have taken a different direction. This is why I don't believe in the sort of retrospective determinism. No, everything could have taken a totally different direction.
It's interesting that one of your first duties after you became ambassador was to accompany President Kwasniewski to meet President Bush. You, as a former member of Solidarity and the Communist Opposition, and Kwasniewski, former head, I think, of the Communist Youth in Poland. Do you do any retrospective thinking about something like that, that kind of odd mix?
Well, you may know that this is very controversial in Poland, and particularly today. Let me just say, Mr. Kwasniewski was the head of the Polish state. He was a respected statesman, respected both in Europe and in the U.S., respected also by President Bush. I had no doubt that he was representing my country well, and I had therefore no doubt that that we represented the same country. And I had no emotional problems with that. He knew very well that I hadn't voted for him. But he accepted it. But this is, I think, that's part of the concept of a democratic country. And this is also part of the concept of diplomacy. You don't serve an individual. You serve your country.
Now, how do you serve your country in the present situation, when there is some considerable opposition in Poland to Poland's participation in the war in Iraq, and I think the official government position is to support the war in Iraq. Do you find that difficult?
No, this is not a real difficulty. This is not a real difficulty. You cannot avoid in foreign policy sometimes going against the stream of the public mood. This is sometimes inevitable. You cannot avoid public discontent with military interventions, for example. But should a government make a referendum on whether to send, whether or not to send troops to other regions? No, that doesn't make sense, because then you can make a referendum on whether to have armed forces or not. I mean, if a nation comes to the conclusion that it doesn't need an army, well, then there will be no choices to be made. But if you have your army, if you feel that you have to care about your security, then it is part of the mandate of a government to make choices, political choices, even if they are sometimes unpopular. The problem is certainly that if you make a choice that is unpopular, but if your choice proves right, then people ratify, so to speak, your choice. So they ratify it post factum. But if you fail, well, then you have to take into account a heavy criticism. Have we failed? No, we have not failed. We have not failed as Poland, and we have not failed as a coalition in Iraq. Can we fail? Well, we may fail. I see it very clearly. We may fail. If we fail, I think we will have to pay a high price for that. Not just Poland, but the whole world. This is why I still believe that we have to do anything to avoid a failure in Iraq. But a situation of a conflict between a government's political decision and the public mood is inevitable, and it is not a source of moral dilemmas for me.
There is one issue, and I'll make this the final question, in which the Polish government and the Polish people are united, I think, as well as the people in Slovakia, the Czech Republic, and Hungary, and that is they would like visa-free free travel to the United States. In other words, that unlike Americans who can go to these countries for shorter visits without visas, people in Central Europe now have to ask for visas. Do you see the United States changing that policy?
Yeah, I do. I do. However, I've seen the United States changing its policy for some time without a decision. So this is a little never-ending story. And I'm afraid that we may miss the opportunity, because I have no doubts that we will come to a solution of this problem. However, the timing is important here. What I'm afraid of is that we may come up with a solution of the problem with the expansion of the visa waiver program, and nobody will be really impressed in Poland or in the Czech Republic, because my sense is that people care less and less about the visa waiver issue with the US. Why? Because they can go to other countries, because Europe is open to them. So why to go to the US if you can go to the UK, to Sweden, to Ireland, Germany, France, and so many countries? People don't even know what a visa is. They don't even need a passport to go to other European countries. They just need any ID. and they cannot only travel, they can also work in other countries, they can move freely in Europe. And this is changing a whole generation. The problem is, however, if this generation doesn't know the US, we may lose this generation for the Polish-American friendship, for the Polish-American relationship. And that would be really a pity. That's what I'd like to avoid, because we've invested so much in the Polish-American relationship. We cannot lose the younger generation. The generation that I call Erasmus generation, named after the Erasmus Fellowship Program, that is granted to thousands of young people in Europe. And these people, these young people, go to other universities in other European countries, and they live the other countries, they live Europe. So does the U.S. need them? Does the U.S. need friends in Central and Eastern Europe? I think and I hope yes. Can this friendship be taken for granted? No, it cannot. And this is why we have to solve this visa waiver problem.
That brings us to the conclusion of this conversation. Our guest today was Janusz Reiter, the ambassador from Poland to the United States. Mr. Ambassador, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We're going to close now with some more of the ambassador's favorite music. This is music from the Andrzej Jagodzinski Trio. For WFIU, I'm Owen Johnson. Thanks for listening.
The program you just heard was recorded in April of 2007. The studio engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Emily McCord was our research assistant. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. More information about Profiles, including archives of past shows, can be found on our website at wfiu.org. Profiles is a production of WFIU and comes from the studios at Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. Please join us again for the next edition of Profiles. For WFIU, thanks for listening.